Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's show, How to Manage a Massive Workload Increase, Part 2. Before we go on, I wanted to mention that if you don't know already, Manager Tools will be coming to Seattle for the Effective Manager Conference on March 22nd and Atlanta on March 14th. So if you want to master the basics of effective management, join us in Seattle or Atlanta in March. More details are available on the website, www.manager-tools.com. We hope to see you there. All right, let's get on with the show. Here we go. Now, it's not enough, I'm guessing, to simply believe, right, that you have to set an example of positive mindedness if you want your folks to respond the same way. If your folks walk away from a meeting with you thinking that it can't be done based upon how you behaved in that meeting, it doesn't matter whether you believed or not, right? You need to set an immediate and clear example of positive mindedness, right?
Yes. Yeah. Look, if you believe you can make it through a massive workload increase, there's a chance that you will. If you don't believe you can do it, you won't. That thinking process alone, the choice of it can be done versus, oh my gosh, how will we? No way, never, is a hidden key to the further steps we're going to walk through. But note what the guidance says. We want you to set an example of positive mindedness. It's not enough to be positive minded as a manager. And in this case, touching on what probably ought to be a series of casts called Leader Tools, you've got to behave in a way that shows others that you believe that you can get it done, that you're positive in your mindset. Whether we believe it can be done or not, this is interesting. Think about this, folks. Whether you believe it can be done or not, you have an obligation to act as if it can be done. I love that phrase, act as if, because that's the root of the word, the meaning of the word believe, is to act as if. But take this simple task. When was the last time you assigned something to your directs that you knew it could not be done, that they could not do it? And we bet you've never done that.
Right.
Well, it's our experience that those more senior folks than you who have decided you're going to get this massive workload increase feel the same way that you do. They haven't given you something that they know you can't do. They may not know how. They may not have an easy answer. They may be relying on you to be creative to figure it out. It's always funny. People complain about a massive workload increase, and they complain, this company never gets me a chance to be creative. Okay, sorry, but I disagree. If you've gotten a massive workload increase, the company assumes you're going to be creative. Believe me, they assume it. So they not only don't think you can't do it, we're reasonably sure they're relying on you to do it. And they're probably willing to give you more leeway than you're used to.
Yeah, I think that's an important distinction. A lot of managers under this situation believe that their management is somehow different from them. Like they would never give something to their directs. Like the person who's feeling this way feels that they would never give something to their directs that they didn't believe couldn't be done, right? Even if required thinking about it creatively, they believe that their direct can get the work done. But somehow they believe that their boss doesn't feel the same way, right? And that they would delegate something that can be done, that's impossible.
I got to make a reminder for Wendy that we've got to talk about that. I've been meaning for a couple of years now to put together the differences between how we see ourselves as manager and how we see our bosses. And this would be one of them, right? The assumption that we would never do something that in fact our boss has just done to us. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but look, if we don't know it can't be done, listen to it again. If we don't know it can't be done, it's the professional's response to act as if it can be done. And then the question is, what kind of things do we need to do as managers set a positive example? I know this is a long cast. You've got to get your mind right about this stuff, but this is still Manager Tools. And so we have some very specific actions we want you to take, starting with meeting immediately with your team and telling them what you know. Okay. Open communication with your team the moment things are official, or if you know that a rumor is about to be made official, open communication with your team sends a message. You're not trying to hide. You're not embarrassed for the company. You're not afraid they'll discover you don't have a plan. The fact is, they know you don't have a plan. There's no discovery involved. And frankly, not having a plan is okay. Not talking at all about it. In other words, not having a plan, so not bring it up because you can't bring it up until you do have a plan, sends a message that you don't have a plan and you feel you're supposed to have a plan, meaning you lack confidence in your ability to get one. And folks, that's what scares directs. It's one thing. Directs are already scared about a massive workload increase if they don't know what's coming and they don't know why and they're worried for their families and so on. But what really scares directs is seeing their managers handle it poorly. So these steps that we're going through now in this first part of the cast are designed to instill some confidence, hopefully in you, but definitely in your directs. If you scare your directs, you're going to increase the doomsday thinking that so many organizations go through when this happens. Too many managers are, in our experience, are just unaware of their role in accelerating the spiral downward. Do not wait until you have a plan to meet your folks and tell them what you know about what's going to happen. Do not wait until there's a series of meetings in 3 days to brief you and your peers on all the details. Meet immediately. Okay. Hey, look, and when we say immediately, we know that people are busy, but this is the kind of thing where you send an email blast out, or you go to everybody's cube, or you send a text message out to everybody, meeting immediately, 1 hour, my office, cancel whatever you have going on. Okay. I mean, look, we don't endorse a lot of role power forcefulness here. This is Manager Tools. We believe in relationships, but every once in a while, role power is good. And when somebody texts you back and says, sorry, I'm in a meeting, say, leave the meeting, get here. That's what we mean by immediately.
And it's not enough to, believe you can do it and not say it. We're recommending here that you say out loud, we can do this, right? Even if you don't have a plan yet.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we can do this. You can say we can do this. In fact, everybody practice right now in your car, wherever you are, say, we can do this.
We can do this. We can do this.
See, it's actually possible. You can actually say that without knowing what we're talking about and not having a plan to actually get there. You're not obligated in this situation, or in all situations, frankly, to have a plan in order to believe that you'll be successful. Okay? Look, planning's important. We want you to plan. Planning is everything. And as Eisenhower, I think, said, planning is everything and plans are nothing. The planning's important, but planning will be much better if there's the start of a belief on your team that there's a way forward that isn't just pure incremental misery. You are the start of that process for your team. And if you don't do this and you start noticing that your team's morale is low, look for the cause of that low morale in increasingly larger concentric circles around your own desk, because you had an opportunity to meet early and send a message and you didn't because you needed a plan or because you need to dot your I's and cross your T's. Yes, I'm talking to you high C's. You need a plan. And before you need a plan, you need to start dampening some of the panic and the fear and the resignedness and the incremental misery that goes along with these kind of massive workload increases. Say it out loud. We can do this.
And folks, look, if you can't brief the plan at that meeting, your team assumes you don't have one and may not be able to come up with one. And they've already started down this like vicious cycle where they're going to assume that the worst is going to happen about just everything that needs to happen. So,
right.
You just got to tell them, you just got to be upfront. I don't have a plan yet, but we're going to come up with one quickly and we'll adjust it as we learn. Right? You've been there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's so funny. They've started down the vicious cycle and their manager's going, well, wait, I'll just wait a little longer and I'll have my plan. No. You stand in front of your team and say, I don't have a plan yet. Folks, the plan, having a plan is not important. Not nearly as important right now as getting out early information and saying, we can do this, having a positive mindset, starting the battle, the tug of war between you and your team about whether positivity or negativity are going to rule the next 6 to 9 to 12 months of your life as you slog through this difficult period. And you're the one that's going to pull the tug of war over to your positive side. So if you say to yourself, well, I'm going to wait until I have the plan, then essentially what you're saying is, I'm going to allow the vicious cycle to continue because I believe a plan is more important than the potential mindset. Wrong. Your plan is going to change 20 times in the next 3 to 4 months. It is, because everybody's got a plan until they get hit and you're going to get hit. Okay. If you don't, you wait 3 or 4 days, you allow that cycle to continue downward. When you actually brief a plan, people are going to be bitching and moaning about how bad the plan is. Okay. So now what people say is, well, Mark, I can't until I have a plan. Sure, you can. Now, if you wait 3 days Or if you meet right away and you don't talk about a plan and you don't say, I don't have a plan, they're going to assume you don't and they're not going to like it. But what you say is, I don't have a plan yet. Okay. We're going to work one up quickly. And by the way, there are plenty of people who are complaining that they don't get opportunities to have a voice. So you're going to give them a voice, believe me, because you don't want to be the only one coming up with ideas. I don't care what your directs do. You want their voice in the plan going forward. But just tell them, I don't have a plan yet. We're going to work one up quickly. We're going to keep adjusted as we learn, and we're all going to do it. I want all voices heard.
And even more, we're going to say out loud two things, right? We know two things right now. One, we don't have a plan, but we need a plan, right? So we're going to get to work, right, putting a plan together. And tell them the second thing that we know, which is we don't need negativity, and I'm not going to accept it.
Yeah. Yeah, say it out loud. I think managers are afraid to do that. They think that everybody's entitled to their opinion and, you know, many voices need to be heard. Yeah, sure, many voices need to be heard when they're coming up with creative ideas, but many voices don't need to be heard when people are spreading doom and gloom about things. You know, so meet before you have a plan. Tell them that there will be a plan and that we know we need one. And look, if you need to, go into the meeting with a time slot to have that planning meeting later that day or tomorrow, depending upon what you know about the timing of the work that's going to come down and the timing of the information you expect to be able to get. And then what you do is address the totally natural and, frankly, in a way reasonable, but still not effective tendency for folks to assume the worst. Tell them you can guess what they're thinking, that you've thought it too as well if you want to. Brutal days, family time crunches, morale dropping. Tell them those things are totally normal, but they don't have to be. And frankly, we've never set a standard around here of normal. We can choose to be positive about this, and we're going to. I'm going to set an example of staying positive because that helps us get through it. And folks, I don't care if you naturally think of yourself as pessimistic or not. I don't care. If you're a manager, you have an obligation to be positive at times like this. If you can't do it, you're choosing your personal preference on broadcasting an emotional state over what the organization needs you to do in order to free up your creativity and new thinking, which pessimism doesn't do. And you need to get out of management. You don't get to be a pessimistic manager during this time. You don't get to assert your personal interest and your emotional state over what's best for the organization. Otherwise, you're not being a manager. You're just being an individual who wants to be themselves. And your job description doesn't say be yourself. It says be effective. But look, tell people that those negative tendencies are normal, but they don't have to be. And frankly, it helps us think creatively. It helps us be a little bit less miserable. And folks, I'm going to be expecting everyone to follow my lead of staying positive. Okay. Now, look, you don't have to go into, and here's how I'm going to address negativity, just right, because that would then be negative, right? Say, I expect everybody to follow my lead. I'm going to stay positive, right? So that's what, four things I think we recommended, right? We recommend you do all of those things in your first announcement, in your first meeting. You could do it in small groups if you wanted to. You could do a series of meetings if you're a director or above, and you have skips who are managers as well, and you can't bring everybody together all at once. The example I used earlier was if you're managing individual contributors, for instance, or you could get all your managers together quickly and you wanted them to cascade it down very, very fast as well. If you're a director and you have managers working for you, you can say, look, pay attention. At the end of this meeting, I'm going to give you a scribble version of the agenda here, and I expect you to repeat this in the next 24 hours to all of your directs as well. And they're not going to, at the end of the meeting, they're going to go, wow, that was great. What did he do? Well, hand out your agenda and say, this is what I did. And of course, if you're a premium content subscriber, you've got it written down for you.
Yeah. But folks, just in particularly for you high C's out there, right? You got to do this quickly. You can't wait till you have all the information. Yeah. You can't wait a week to get all your ducks in a row. By that time, yep, folks already know, they've already started to cycle down into negativity, and you've lost all your opportunity to actually be a leader here. We're not trying to control information flow here, and we're not trying to shame people for feeling overwhelmed. That's not the point. What we're trying to do is get ahead of it and lead folks.
Yeah. A leader says, I know where you are. I'm not saying where you are is wrong or bad or you should be ashamed about it, but I am where I want you to be, and I will be positive enough, communicative enough, professional enough, ethical enough, and creative enough, and effective enough that you're going to want to be where I am. And that's on the positive side of things.
Right. This is something we'd be talking about in Leader Tools, right? This would be about leadership. And we don't talk about that very often. The idea of putting yourself out there as an example of what you want people to be. And in this case, this is what we're talking about being. You have to be positive.
Yeah, it reminds me of Army slogan 25 years ago, be no do. You've got to be a certain way, you've got to know certain things, and you got to do certain things, and that's what makes a leader. Yeah, now look, we're not saying that being a leader ends with this initial meeting, but we are saying this first meeting is important to establish a tone which you as a manager and leader are obligated to continue to model and expect of others throughout this experience. If your team goes into a downward spiral, folks, it's your fault. You're responsible for their performance. And you have the only way out of that is to set a different example rather than shaming them for feeling what they're feeling, which they're entitled to.
Good. Our third point, do not complain or blame. That seems pretty simple, right? I mean, you work for the company.
Well, okay. Yeah, it seems simple, but there has been in the last 20 years, in my opinion, it's 2011 now, a move toward managers as buddies, managers as part of the team, which is, by the way, inherently false. When was the last time you were on a team in high school or college or university and one of the team members could fire everybody else? Just doesn't happen. Folks, if you're a manager, you're not a member of the team. You're a part, but you're not a member of the team. In fact, you're not only a part of the team, you're apart from the team.
Well, matter of fact, to the other quote-unquote team members, you are the company, right? So unless the whole company's the team, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. You work for the company. You represent the company. Unless you expect the company to say on its website, we're all complaining around here about the effect of this layoff or whatever it was that happened that caused the workload change, then you can have no expectation that you get to do it. Right? The company's not saying that on the website. The company's trying to stay positive, and it's your obligation as the company to your team to stay positive as well. If you complain, your team hears the company complaining. You represent, folks, you are the company to your team. Otherwise, why would you be the one that gets to promote people or give reviews or decide whom to hire? Those are institutional, organizational processes that you embody, that the company is saying, for the moment, you're speaking for the company.
Yeah.
No complaining, folks. None. No whining. Okay. No whiners. Okay. At any time about anything. And there are going to be times when you walk by your team and you see the team complaining a little bit and you decide maybe it's late on a Friday. And so you're going to give them a minute to blow off steam. You're not going to address it, although we would disagree. And you hear them then laugh about some dark, dark sort of joke that suggests that we're all doomed or something, but it's funny and they all laugh and they get back to work and you have to walk by and not be part of them. You have to set an example, which is different than that. The one time you don't want to be complaining is in a time when complaining and negativity are going to exacerbate the situation, right? Yeah, everybody appreciates a little bit of dark humor every once in a while, but not now when people get negative and they get down and then they go home and their spouse is upset at them because they're working too long hours and they don't have a restful weekend and they come back on Monday and they're like, geez, I don't even want to be at work this week.
Yeah. And in times like these, like attitude matters, right? I mean, it matters.
And attitudes matter and people are looking for or would be open to a different example than what they see around them, which is negativity.
Yeah. They want to be inspired in times like these.
Yeah. And by the way, folks, if you're feeling like this is a little bit corny, sorry. The stories we've read over the years and the experiences Mike and I and others, friends and associates and clients of ours and so on, the successes that they've had have been inspirational, right? And they feel inspired when they're doing it. And that's part of your job is to inspire somebody else, which, by the way, inspire means to breathe life into people. Nothing wrong with that. You know, the effective manager looks like a leader in part because he doesn't think or speak negatively. Look, don't talk about the mistakes your folks made. Don't disparage other departments. Don't stay later than everyone else as a leader might. Okay. Let me finish now, and then ruin it by mentioning it to everyone the next day that you were the last one in the office, right? So don't complain too much, folks. I was the last one in here. Talk about demotivating people to stay late. That's complaining about your workload. It's wrong as a manager. It's more than just being ineffective as a manager. It's almost morally wrong to do that. Look, folks, a lot of things are going to go wrong. Your department is likely to get thrown under the bus by another department, because departments are looking to be, you know, the tallest midget in the room. Others, maybe it's peers you don't get along with, maybe even more senior people, are going to express frustration with you and your team's lack of performance as you wallow in the beginning to get a handle on the size of this new workload increase. technically they're right that you're not doing well, and they're also stupid. Okay? Don't respond to stupidity. I was about to say stupidity and negativity, right? Don't do it. Okay? If somebody wants to hammer you, if when your team is pilloried, stand up and take it. You're right, sir. Yes. I won't argue that. You're right. Our numbers have gone down. Saying someone's right when in fact they're stating a fact with venom, other people will respect you for it rather than attempting to say, well, but you don't understand. It's these other 17 factors. Shut up and take it. Trust us. You will be respected all the more. That's a way of being positive. Admitting that there are problems, factual admissions of problems or numbers not met or efficiencies not gained or whatever. That is a form of positivity. Positivity doesn't mean ignoring the negatives. It means not talking about them other than to be truthful about them when they're on the table. Don't try to blame the problems you're facing or the lower numbers you've got on the workload. Don't share what other departments who are probably similarly burdened like you are, but may not be. Don't share what other departments haven't done that keep you from doing what you're supposed to have done. Shut up about the problems you're facing. Okay. Everybody has problems. Talking about problems just means we have the problem and the time spent talking about the problem was not efficient. Okay. Don't make the mistake of going to your boss each week and repeating that you need more people. Okay. Don't do it. We bosses, we hate it. You know, don't repeat every week. It can't be done. It can't be done. That it seems unfair that your team is having to work so hard because maybe because of somebody else's mistake or a bad product launch or the economy or whatever it is. Unfairness. I could spend hours talking about the idea of unfairness in an organization.
Yeah, and don't fall into the trap of believing that just because you're behind closed doors with your boss, a boss who trusts you and whom you trust, it doesn't mean it's time to take off the mask and just let it all hang out, right? I mean, if your boss in these meetings asks you privately about your team, talk about the positives, right? Choose to talk about positive things versus falling in this opportunity of sharing all the negatives. Your boss does not appreciate it.
Yeah, taking off the mask and letting them know how bad it really is because that's what bosses are there for, to be a sounding board for your troubles and so on. I don't know who came up with that idea, but no, sorry, not true. Now, look, there are times for that when you have to keep on a good face, but you really need to go tell your boss, this is a fundamental crisis. But you would be surprised, folks, how surprisingly rare that is.
Yeah. Well, it's just this lack of congruity between what you're saying and how you're behaving outside of the meeting with your boss. And all of a sudden, you know, going to a meeting and showing your true self to be this negative person.
Yeah, exactly. The whole true self. Yeah. When you engage in the take off the mask kind of behavior, you're sending a message which essentially precedes every one of your communications to everybody else, in this case, to your boss. You don't know whether this is me or this is my mask. And look, the answer is, look, it's harder, but this is Manager Tools and we want you to be the best you can be. And we know you can be. It's far better to just decide to behave as a professional all the time. That means sometimes not saying everything you're thinking or feeling, but rather determining what is the most effective idea to communicate to help the organization, which by the way, does include you. If you don't tell your boss everything already, and you know you don't, right, then you agree with this concept. And we're just suggesting you think differently about how you apply that thinking in situations like massive workload increases. Now, look, I know there are people who are sitting out there right now and saying, well, he's telling me not to be candid. No, we're not. It's okay to talk about struggles, but do so in a positive way. You know, we're facing this issue, and here's the things we're doing about it, as opposed to saying, well, we've got this problem again, right? And then leaving your boss's office after saying, well, we've got this problem again, and say, okay, guys, let's go do it. Now, treat your boss with the same professional respect that you do your team and be an example. It's okay to be an example. It's not that you're trying to set yourself apart from the organization. It's that you're trying to be inside the organization, encouraging the organization to move in the right direction. There's nothing wrong with that. I'll never forget. Somebody said, give me the best example of a leader that you know of. And I kind of laughed. Of course, Mike, you know, I thought about Colonel Texera and they did not know that I was thinking of Colonel Texera. But I said, I'll give you the perfect example that everyone can do today. Everybody has this idea that a leader has to be an important role or that a leader has to be distinct or different or unique. And that's just false. the best leadership example I can remember in a microcosm, and folks, this isn't management. In fashion, it is a manager doing his or her job, but this is leadership. Three or four people come together, you know, let's say they're executives or whatever, but it doesn't really matter. It did happen to be Colonel Texera, and I was in the meeting when it happened. And people came together, and there was a serious problem. And everybody came in, and the S3 and the S4, all these different people came together and say, well, what about, we've got this problem. And yeah, we've got this, and we got this, and we got this. Because seven or eight different perspectives. And the colonel's listening there, he's smoking a cigar, and he looks and goes, okay, what are we going to do? To me, that's leadership. Because what people were doing was describing how bad the situation was. They weren't really, it started out being factual, but then it turned into, oh my gosh, and that part plays on this point. And so clearly it's much worse. The synergy of all the negativity is going to drop us straight into the floorboards of hell. And, Texera looked at all and says, okay, what are we going to do? And in that moment, it's like, boom. Okay, let's take action. That's what leaders do. And to me, that's a form of inspiration right there. He breathed life into us, all of us, and said, okay, right, we can whine and complain about where we are, or we can do something. Let's take action. Let's move in the right direction. Even if we don't move in the exact right direction, I know that in the next 30 seconds, us standing around complaining about how bad things are is not going to be a move in the right direction. That's leadership. And it's a microcosm.
Yeah, when you're thinking about taking action, you're not thinking about your problems. You're thinking about moving forward. I know for me, when I'm late at night, it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm stressed about something, I can't sleep. I can solve the problem immediately. I get up, I go downstairs, I pull out a piece of paper and I list the next three or four or five things I'm going to do about it. Literally just list five actions I'm going to take. And then I go to bed and I sleep like a baby. Right.
Yeah.
Organizations respond the same way. When they're taking action in a positive direction, they're less likely to take time thinking about all the negatives.
Yeah.
Okay. Of course, now you can't whine with your boss. Of course, you can't whine with your directs. Although, again, there's a tendency to want to do so, to commiserate with folks. You can't do it, folks.
Yeah. This is the worst of all possible behaviors for a manager or a leader during times of high stress. Listening to your directs, engage in behaviors that you would other times prohibit. Listening to them whine and complain because, everybody's stressed, so they've got to blow off some steam. It's okay. Oh, the HR experts, the workplace stress experts, I'll tell you, it's okay. It's going to happen. Yeah. So, sit with them and listen to them and hear their problems. Look, when people are whining or complaining, that's not a way of them sharing their problems with you. You can expect them to be adults and professionals. And if they have problems, to come and talk to you about them without whining and complaining about them. And look, folks, when people are whining and complaining, they're not working effectively. They're literally not working. And so every minute they spend whining is a minute they don't spend on a task, which we all admit is now so much work that we can't get it all done. Why are we wasting even a minute complaining about it? Now, look, again, let me take a little aside. If you're thinking, geez, everybody has to blow off some steam now and again, do they expect me and my team to be robots? And the answer is, folks, no, we don't. We know that these things do happen. But trust us, folks. Your team is taking plenty of other opportunities to blow off steam with each other. It's not that we know we're going to preclude all complaining, right? Never prohibit what you can't prevent. You can't be there every second. During times of high stress, it's normal for folks to complain a bit. It's going to happen. You can't stop it. But that doesn't mean you have to support it or encourage it by modeling it yourself. If you do something with your directs, you're setting an example that what you're doing at the time is not just okay, you approve. You might think it's harmless, but it's not. You whining or complaining with your directs sends a message that they can do more of it when you're not around. And you not only lose the minutes, 5 or 10 minutes or whatever it is, of the whining and complaining you're doing while you're there, but they're going to do more of it when they go back to work. And you're going to lose a half an hour each day, which if each one of you listening right now could say, if I could magically give you a half hour each day, free of all interruptions and so on, you'd be like, yeah, I'll take that in a second, right? It sends a message when you whine and complain that they might be able to get away with it outside of your team because the boss apparently is doing it. So apparently the organization thinks it's kind of okay. None of the things that happen because of this are good. Now, look, just because some of your folks think something is true, and by the way, that's a common defense of people who are complaining. Well, but it's true, right? Just because somebody thinks it's true doesn't mean they get to utter negative thoughts that impact the rest of your team in a bad way. Folks, truth is not a defense. And look, you're not calling them a liar. You're telling them the behavior isn't helpful. If somebody's doing something that is true or saying something that's true, but it's not helpful, just the fact that it's not helpful is enough to be stopped. If something's true, they can think it. But the moment they communicate it, they're taking other people's time and they're taking away from other people's morale, both of which, time and morale, are part of the resources you're going to apply with the totality of your team to solve the problem you're facing. And one person is eating up one, two, three, four, five people's time and morale. And look, let's just go back, right? Simple as that. Time is limited. You've got to be effective. When your folks are complaining, they're not working and they're lowering morale as well. So don't do it with your folks.
Now, folks, if you think that is hard, you feel like you'd like to be able to blow off steam as well as them to blow off some steam, we're going to make it even harder. We're going to go further here. We're going to recommend that you not only don't complain or whine with your directs or your boss, for sure.
Right.
We also recommend you stop it when you see it happening. When you walk up and you see a group of folks and you join the group and they're complaining, you just don't walk away. Literally, you stop it. You don't tolerate any whining.
At all. Yeah. And look, it'll definitely help if you've already set the no complaining tolerated policy, could I use that term loosely, in your initial briefing. We talked about that a little bit ago, hours ago, it seems, in this cast, folks. We apologize for how long this is, but you will love that it's long when you, in fact, need it. Okay. But look, all you're doing when you address negativity, when you address whining or complaining 3 weeks after that initial briefing, it's great to know that you're just reminding them of a standard you've already set and that hopefully you've been keeping as well.
Right. We're not suggesting you be a jerk about it and scowl and yell at them or do any of that kind of stuff. If you've been a longtime manager to us, listen, I don't think we've ever recommended something like that, except maybe in the case somebody hits somebody or does something egregious.
Right.
You might put it into that.
Yeah.
But in general, we're not suggesting at all that you be angry. You just give them feedback, right?
Yeah. If you're ready to give feedback, right, which we'll talk about in just a minute, it would sound like, hey, can I give some feedback? And now, by the way, for those of you who don't know, you wouldn't walk up to a group and then give the one person who was talking feedback in front of everybody else, just to be clear. But if you're ready to give feedback and you know how to do it and you do it for the private use of the person that you're talking to and only one person at a time, you'd say, hey, can I give some feedback? When you gripe about the workload, it doesn't set a professional standard for the new guys. Or, hey, can I give some feedback? When you gripe about the workload, it's time you could have been working on the pile of stuff we've got to do. Or, hey, can I give some feedback? When you gripe about the workload, it brings down others when they need to be focused as well. Or, hey, can I give some feedback? When you gripe about the amount of work we got, it just goes against what we all agreed to when our world changed on us. And then the last step, of course, in almost all those, you'd say, can you do that better for me? Or can you change that for me? Or can you work on that? Right? Those are all reasonable, professional, polite things. It's okay when people are telling a dark joke about how miserable they all are. You can walk up and chuckle a little bit. In fact, our friend Dan McGuire says, in my career, this, you know, I have the darkest, driest sense of humor in the world, and I can vouch for that. He does. We didn't name the McGuire hump of the Horseman curve after him for no reason at all. And you can walk up and you can chuckle a little bit, and then you can take somebody aside and say, hey, can I give you some feedback? And just try to keep things on track a little bit. It's a small thing, but if you do it with a smile, with a chuckle, people won't feel offended, and they'll know that you're reminding them of something you asked them to do when, as we said earlier, the world ended or the world collapsed. Now, Exactly. Now look, if you're not familiar with the manager tools feedback model, that's okay. It's fine. You can still address this kind of stuff. You could say to the whole group, in this case, if it's not feedback, you can say, hey, guys, could you cool the griping and get back to work? Thanks. Or, hey, guys, that's not helping. Back to work, everybody. Or you could say, hey, folks, let's not make this any worse. Cursing the mule, don't load the cart. That's one of my favorite sayings. For those of you who are manager tools aware, you know that we recommend first building relationships with directs through one-on-ones and then teaching the feedback model to your directs. I say teaching in quotes, really. Teaching the feedback model to directs by starting with positive feedback only. If you're already there and you've got a relationship built through one-on-ones and you've been doing positive feedback and they're ready for this kind of negative feedback, great. Okay. I'm glad you're already doing one-on-ones and feedback during this time of crisis. It'll help you immensely. And if you're really aware, you know also that we say that any part of the management trinity, one-on-ones, feedback, coaching, delegation, can be used at any time with success. That all of the parts work individually. A la carte works fine. It's just not as easy to start somebody with the feedback model if you haven't built a relationship yet and through one-on-ones. And poor delivery can sometimes make situations work. So be cautious about that. Now, look, if you sense that the complaining and the struggling and the whining and the bitching and the moaning, pardon my French, is happening more than you like, whether you're addressing it or not, it's probably time for a quick reminder during your one-on-ones, as well as addressing it when you see it.
That's a good point.
Those you hear complaining, mention it, you know, mention it to them during the one-on-ones. Give them feedback if you want, or mention it as non-feedback using the examples we mentioned.
Yeah, you're suggesting one-on-ones. Just to be clear here, you're not suggesting doing this at a staff meeting. I can see people making the leap, right? Okay, one-on-ones meeting with an individual. Why don't I just do it at my staff meeting? And we're not talking about giving feedback in a sense to your entire team.
Yeah, stand up in front of it. Hey, guys, by the way, I just want to remind you about that early meeting we had. I've noticed there's been a lot of grumbling. Let's cool that stuff. Shotgun feedback is just one of the dumbest things we've done. I know I've done it as Meg.
I was young
and stupid.
You know, what it does is the offenders, they don't think you're talking to them. So
you can't be talking to me. I don't do that. Right?
And the innocent people just get ticked off. It's like, why is he giving me crap about that?
Why is he wasting my time? I got work to do. Literally, shotgun feedback is 100% bad. Everybody gets the wrong message, right? And look, let's go a step further, right? Okay. This is hard. And look, when leaders and managers are faced with tough crises, you bear more of the burden than your team. That's part of it. Okay. You trust them to do more and you bear more of it. So let's not tolerate griping and complaining from ourselves either. Even sitting at your desk with your head in your hands, that's time you're wasting. And over again, what we see is that folks who talk negatively to themselves carry it over to others on their team. And when you talk negatively, you become less creative. And this is not the time to lack creative ways of addressing things, folks. Optimism is a force multiplier, and pessimism destroys your options and energy. So don't do it. It sounds corny. There's been a little bit of corn here in this podcast. But the start to staying positive is avoiding the negative. You can't do both at the same time. When you get a little bit negative, just the first step to get out of that is just stop being negative. Okay. Just shut up. Then start working. After you've worked a little bit, then you can think about being positive when you get up from your desk again. You know, nothing so cheers one's overwhelmed inbox mind more than one more completed task, at least in my experience, as you indicated, right? Put some stuff down, put it to rest, go to bed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Works like a charm.
And by the way, Mike, you know, this isn't in the cast, but wouldn't you say that when everybody else goes home and managers have gotten in the bad habit of doing their stuff between 5 and 7 at night, that when we're really tired, when people are coming and complaining to us and we're visiting with them, we're keeping people positive and we're dealing with people complaining outside of our team and everybody's pissed that we're failing. Don't you think that that's the time when everybody goes away, manager has a chance to be alone, that they think they're going to get their work done, but that's when they become the most negative?
Yeah, that's
right.
I've
when they're
never
tired
thought
before
about
they go
it
home?
That way, but you're absolutely right. Right, the time when you're tired and you're less able to keep that cheery attitude, and now you want to sit down and do the important and hard things. That's not a good recipe.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a good recipe. So look, you start working on things, you get a little bit negative. If it stays negative for 5 minutes, get up from your desk and go home.
Yeah.
Okay. And I have a story for you. It's not in the show notes, but there's a story. I like really emotionally positive stories. There's a story about a guy who his neighbor noticed that every time he came home from work, before he walked into the house, he would touch a branch of a tree as he walked in. And his neighbor, after a few months, finally said, "Hey, you know, I noticed, you know, they're friends. So I notice every time you come home from work, before you walk in the house, you touch that tree. What's up with that?" He says, "Oh, that's my worry tree." And the guy says, "Huh?" He says, "That's where I hang my worries from work. And I leave them out here. And then I go into the house and I'm with my family. And when I come back in the morning, you don't see it, but I pick my worries back up." Folks, you don't need to take this home. If your spouse is your life partner and you're close and you share everything, okay. But don't just unload on them. I mean, take 5 minutes. By the way, I think we've said it in a cast somewhere that in fact, most fights at home happen in the kitchen, according to sociologists. And the reason is not because the kitchen is a fighting place, but rather because when it comes to dual income couples, one of them is already in the kitchen making dinner. They've decompressed. The other one comes home. They expect the other person to be home immediately for them, and they're not. And there's a clash between work and home simply because, and it's in the kitchen because that's where both people are. So a recommendation, when you get home, hang your worries on a worry tree before you go into the house. Be a leader at home as well, and go and change clothes for 5 or 10 minutes before you go visit with your spouse or your kids or whatever. And that will give you another buffer so you can go be positive to them as well.
Yeah. Good point.
Wow. Family tools. Ooh. No, just kidding.
Thanks, everyone. That's it for part two. We'll continue this discussion next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.